everyone. Welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, I'm back, actually. And I'm now joining the more regular host now, apparently, Andy Asimakis. How you doing, buddy?
God, you leave for like one or two shows, and you act like it's been a year.
It feels like forever, and this last one...
You've had like more than month-long hiatuses before.
I know. There was one time where I didn't miss a lot of shows, but we posted a lot of shows that you did by yourself, like back to back to back. And it was like I wasn't part of the show for like 4 weeks in a row.
Not intentional.
Just
on my part.
Just a way for Andy to get more controlling stake in the company of Dual Screens. With us this week is Adam Kareem.
I don't want control.
Developer of Protodroid Delta, a fast and fluid 3D action platformer set in a beautiful and hopeful solar punk world. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, fellas. Appreciate it. And welcome to my bedroom. All right. And this is the closest you'll ever get to it. All right. Stay out of my room.
First of all, that's a little presumptuous of you to say.
That sounds like a challenge, my friend.
I feel a friendship brewing here that could last decades.
I'm going to get my ass on that bed.
It may not be that bedroom specifically.
This is backfiring tremendously. Let's see.
There will be a house party when you're celebrating your yachts and all this stuff. Because I'll be honest, man, Protodroid Delta, I played the demo actually right before we went live here. And
cool.
Man, it's dope as hell. Why don't you tell everybody what Protodroid Delta is for those who are the uninitiated.
Yes, for those uninitiated, welcome to your initiation. What happens here stays here. The first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. First rule about game development is you don't talk about game development. The game just happened magically, and then people cry, and then now you have a product, and it's great. But my game...
That's accurate. A lot of our former guests, we cried a lot, and then you made a game. Mm-hmm. Buy it.
In that order, in that sequence, man. My game is, by and large, it is a 3D version of Mega Man X. That's pretty much was the inspiration for it. Like, I grew up loving, Mega Man, particularly Mega Man X, like, X1 through 3. Actually, through 4, X4 were, I love those games so much growing up. And I always wanted to play and experience that in 3D, and I kind of... You know, you look at like the large history of Mega Man is like including the classic series and the X series as well as Zero and ZX. There's like over 30 titles that are like 2D side scrollers, and only three if you don't include Command Mission, which is technically an RPG. There's only three that are actually like action games in 3D. And so I thought it's such a missed opportunity to kind of like cap it, to make that transition, because you look at like other wonderful 2D games. Mario, Super Mario World became Mario 64, 3D classic, set like it was like a genre defining moment. Zelda went from like a link to the past to Ocarina of Time, amazing 3D experience, similar with Metroid Prime transitioning forward from Super Metroid. So I always felt kind of like a gap, like an opening and missing thing that like Mega Man didn't also gracefully make that jump to 3D. Because the Legends 1, Legends 2 games, although near and dear to my heart, were way different from other Mega Man games.
Way
different.
Mm-hmm. It varied from the formula, whereas the other examples you gave just translated the formula.
Exactly. Right. And so I always thought it'd be cool if there was just like the formula, the Mega Man X formula, speed in 3D space, mostly focused on like maneuvering and positioning and besting the different Mavericks, but in 3D. And so that became a fever dream, which became a hobby that I did on the nights and weekends around my full-time job, which then became running a small game studio part-time outside of like my main job. Then ultimately became Protodroid Delta, which is now available on everywhere.
Did X7 scar you so badly that you had to make this game?
You know what's funny? Ignorance is bliss. I never played X7, bro. I only found out about X7 like in hindsight, the people talking it, like mentioning how bad it was. And it wasn't even until after I started making like this game as like a prototype. It started off as a fan game called Mega Man X and Zero. And the people were like, this is what X7 should have been. And I was like, oh, there was an X7? Like,
It's not like even like it's so bad it's good. It's just it's an irredeemable piece of garbage.
It is. I'm told it
and
is.
You need to experience it.
I
get
so
the
I
collection
got...
and try it.
You know what's funny? One of the first reviews on Steam that was like I think the very first review for my game on Steam was, it's really great to see Mega Man X7 become a video game.
I have awesome. Never listen. Awesome. I feel like that game, it's magical because it can convince no talent hacks like me that I can voice act and I can make games.
Burn,
because someone made that and thought it was don't stop it.
Yes, yeah, but it's funny you mentioned the Mega Man X7 because going into my game, it basically was like almost like the holy and the unholy trinity of like Mega Man things that like I got a lot of flack for originally. Like when I was running the Kickstarter, a lot of like feedback I got, not a lot, but some of the more commonly said things I heard were like, oh man, another Mega Man's inspired Kickstarter, just like Mighty Number 9. This doesn't bode well. Oh man, a 3D Mega Man X game, just like Mega Man X7. This doesn't bode well. And so it was like these things, I was carrying like the sins of my, you know, the sins of like the father or whatever. It's like, I didn't do those things, but people were sort of like projecting, like, because these folks have failed in this realm and you are treading in similar waters, we're just going to automatically say that, hey, red flag, you're bad. But fortunately they were in the minority.
I mean, you know, there were, what, 45 3D games that came out the year after Mario 64, and like maybe two of them were any, you know, worth anything. You know,
well, even so,
it
like,
takes a while for you know, people to get it, you know, and it's, to me, it seems like you got it because
thanks, man.
And Andy, but I didn't mean to cut you off, but like one of the things I wanted to say right off the bat is, you know, there are games that come out that take the nostalgia of something we're familiar with. In this case, it's Mega Man or it's 3D platformers, action platformers. But they hold on to the nostalgia a little too much.
Yeah.
And they don't innovate enough controls wise or moment to moment wise. And I think you have a really good balance there of that, because the controls, while they were familiar and intuitive, I was like, oh, that's an interesting way to do this ability that is usually just press a button and there it happens. Like you have to do a little bit extra to kind of get that little extra platforming oomph that, you know, the dash jump and holding jump and like all of that stuff. I just think that that's one of the crowning accomplishments, honestly, of Protodroid. Is that it really doesn't make me feel like, oh yeah, they really captured the nostalgia of that genre and the camera sucks just as it did back then. I'm glad you went the other way with that. Holy shit, you can lie on.
I appreciate that. Yeah, man. No, I really appreciate
you
that.
You didn't
ignore
30 years of innovation. Cool.
Exactly, awesome. Right? Because it's funny you mentioned the lock on, because for me, applying that auto lock was like one of the foundational blocks, the design blocks for the game, because if you don't, then the game becomes like Fortnite. It becomes a third person, a third person shooter, which is the antithesis of like Mega Man, which is the accessibility of it. It really is just like jump and shoot. So if you can just master moving left and right, pressing jump and timing your shooting, you can essentially play the game. Whereas with like shooters, you know, even though it's like the most popular genre today, folks like myself, I guess, who kind of have had that old retro kind of DNA, I never really got that good at the right thumbstick, you know, and that is a barrier to entry for a lot of folks. It's like manipulating that in a fine-tuned way. But when you add that on top of 3D platforming, now we're talking 4D chess, bro. 4D checker chess. Because you have to like think ahead about what you're doing, and also I react in real time while manipulating. It was gonna be a nightmare. So I'm happy to hear that you noticed the lock-on was helpful, because that unlocks, like the lock-on unlocks everything. Because
the lock-on in games like this, in a lot of like when it's poorly designed, the lock-on just fucks you good. Like it's like I'm gonna jump, lock on, jump in the other one. God damn it, no!
But this Steve, can you just put X7 video playing on a loop?
Oh, thank you.
Because it's amazing how, again, with the lock-on, you guys are talking about it, that is like one of the most chastised things about X7, and that you never, among many things.
Yes,
and that. You haven't played it, and you got it. You pulled it off better than a multi-billion-dollar company did years ago. Because I was like, I was playing this thing and I was like, how do we get this guy to like just make Mega Man games as like a job?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably gonna happen. I mean, honestly,
give him like
a
full team, like, of people.
Honestly, one of the things that another thing that really
there's the full team right behind
there's
him.
There's the team.
That's why you do it, man.
Hi, little
this
one.
This is the she's the lead level designer, one here is the lead artist.
Excellent.
Yes. Thank you for your hard work, and I'll pay you in pizza.
you're in California, right?
I am.
Dear California, that is all in jest. Please do not arrest Adam for child labor exploitation. It is all in jest.
Dear Governor Newsom.
Dear Governor Newsom, please.
These are just jokes, dear
chill.
Governor. Just jokes.
They're my kids, which may or may not make it worse. I do not know. State of California, please don't take my money.
It's definitely smart.
One of the other things that really stood
out
to me.
You got two kids also, Steve. We're saying
I
here.
Do. And
a golden opportunity.
When they come through this door, it's a very different vibe than what Adam just had. Me, I'm just like, I just go straight to the dad look. I'm like, what? The record light is on. What are we doing? What are we doing? Have we not learned? But no, it's all good. We're all family people. Sometimes Andy's puppy makes an appearance. It's all good. Sometimes the cooge makes appearance.
That's good.
Yeah. Listen, one of the things we pride ourselves on is we are an unedited. Oh, everything just flipped for some reason. Why did that?
My camera is doing wonderfully annoying things where like it focuses and defocuses. So I just sort of blinked it off and blinked it on.
I gotcha. All right, I'll move you back into the spots. All good. So just to get back to the game, one of the things I think instantly grabbed me outside of like Mega Man's cool and everything like that, but I never felt like they were people.
Yeah.
Like it always felt like they were mascots.
Yeah.
And
I
hear that. The personality was second.
Yeah, Mega Man's not people.
I only played the demo to make sure I got my hands on it. But Delta and what we saw of Android.
Android. That's her name.
Android. I love it. It was really, like really well
creativity.
Done. I was
like,
oh,
it's like peak
I
writing.
Love them. Like I love these two androids. Like they're relatable and they're adorable and they're fun. And I can't wait. And I'm absolutely buying the game because I want to see their story progress, obviously. I honestly, like Andy was like, play the demo first because he knows how shitty I am at these games. Like just like Mega Man and me just don't.
They don't mesh.
I like the IP. I like the
don't do it.
The robot masters and whatnot. But man, am I bad at that kind of game. But I liked it and I actually did pretty well. So I hope that bodes well for my adventures.
It's a great little Steam Deck title, Steve. I find myself playing it in bed very often. It's just it's amazing how all of all of my years of playing Mega Man and Mega Man X especially, how the 2D like muscle memory translates into 3D space. It just is like I feel like my fingers know what they're doing, even in this new space with the lock on and you know the extra layer of what's going on. But it's just the level design I think is what makes it so work so well. And that's a key for any Mega Man game is level design, because like you've always learned how to play these games through the level design, and that kind of like shines through here like 100%. Like you know
what to both of your points, so like that's for the first one, level design, and then on the characters. For level design, like I kind of realized, like, hey, you know, like, I need comps. Like, I need to find I originally tried to say, let me just take the 2D level design from the original X series in theory and see if I can sort of like translate that into 3D. Mm-hmm. And in the first sort of like prototype levels I made doing that, I was like, these kind of suck and they kind of feel very bare. And then I realized that's a weird, strange thing to do is to sort of like skip decades of like gaming knowledge and development experience to try to jump from 1994 to modern day and then see if I can make that translation. So instead I was like, well, what are some games that kind of have a similar design of like focusing on level design that will be conducive to the way the camera needs to work so that the lock on can work? And then it became obviously, okay, let me look at like Mario 3D Land on 3DS. Let me look at Mario 3D World on like the Wii U. Very similar kind of structure about like amazing platforming, but like very light use and necessitation of like the camera. And but you don't even think about the camera because you're so like the level design is like so like key. Hey, buddy, put that down. They see it. Yeah, I know. So that's what, that's what I ended up doing. That's what we ended up staffing up my team and getting like a slew of like level designers, all like junior folks or first year industry folks. But that, like, given the fact we are like super novices in this thing, we want to get well done, we're going to have to learn from the best. So we studied like Kirby and the Forgotten Land. We studied those two Mario 3D like Land and World titles. We studied like Crash Bandicoot 4. And legit was just like, what are the elements, design elements that make these level, these games work and these levels work? What sort of like hazard design makes sense, platforming design? And we just sort of like made this cocktail of like some of those best ideas that also happen to work with the games like Mega Man Identity. That helped a lot, like as opposed to being a bunch of, we're fresh, overambitious indie dudes and girls. Like, let's just do it ourselves. It's like, man, no, you're going to end up with some bad levels.
When you were designing the levels, how much did your world design, your vision for the world of Proto Droid Delta, did that influence the level design at all, or did the level design the other way around?
The level design, I was always moved by the story of how like Splatoon was made and apparently how Mario 64 was made, where it's like, apparently with Splatoon for the longest time, the game was just like a capsule and like a gray space, like a gray blockout. And within, and Nintendo's thing is like, find the fun. Like, you need to find what makes something fun before you start investing in like all the art and all the other things, which are kind of like not as easily as like pivotable or replaceable. Hey, buddy, stop. Buddy. And so that's what became the focus first. You should see some of them. I have some footage of the earliest like level designs. It's just like blockouts, man. Just rectangular blocks that define really compelling playable spaces. But in parallel with that getting made, I was in developing like the art direction for the solar punk world, because for me, I was like, you know what? In games, the most common settings, like for some reason, everyone imagines the future to be gritty, cyberpunky, and sad. It's like the world has come to an end. Humanity's
down. No, that's my life pretty much today.
Somebody hasn't been describing to Times Square.
Seriously.
It's a beautiful, bright hellscape.
Yes, yes. And so I was like, you know what, let's try something different. You know, let's try something that isn't so like so much of the same about like there has to be other visions of the future besides this, right? That everything all just goes to crap. And so that's where like the motivation for Solarpunk came in. And so I then found myself with a challenge of like, how do I like wrap around the core level design with art that at least sells a compelling story of like, hey, this is what this world kind of looks like and what it's about. And for that, we kind of drew inspiration from Ratchet and Clank. Because Ratchet and Clank like is very similar in that it's like very platformy kind of level design stuff.
I knew that like, felt like that. Like,
yeah,
I couldn't
the perimeters.
Yeah,
the perimeter is where the art shines and where you see like the world and everything, and you get a sense like you're almost on a whole planet when all you've done is littered like the out like perimeter with like buildings and assets and trees and stuff. That means you gives this to convey to you that, oh well, you're an alien planet. So that's kind of where how I was able to we were able to tie that in, like the art with the level design, in a way that didn't like break one or the other.
Dope. You're eating tissues.
Yes. We're back to that Gavin Newsom thing. I'm a good parent. Please don't take my kids from me.
That's Proto Droid Alpha. We haven't worked out the kids yet. we're working on that. My kids have graduated up to eating Q-tips, so they'll get there. There we go. They'll get there.
Yeah, but yeah, and then circling back a little bit about the characters. Yeah, that was the other thing I thought was like a missed opportunity, was that like it partially was drawn from the fact that like, you know, as any developer with very limited resources, I'm putting a lot into making these characters look cool and have cool character design and have kind of like and like it would feel weird to just throw that away. You know, spend all this time making someone look somewhat type of way and make sure they're cool, and then you see them, you have a 2-minute dialogue, you beat them, they blow up, and then you never see them again. And that's what's happened like every like Maverick, every Robot Master in like the X games. I was like, that's kind of a missed opportunity to like really add some lore to these characters, give them some more meat and some sort of like more story, such that so that they do feel like fully fleshed characters. So that when you do best them, it feels like a relationship has developed or changed in some way. So that became like a deliberate design decision. Like, okay, I want to make characters that are memorable, and I want to basically make these interactions not just these one-off one-liners about like, why'd you go Maverick? Because I'm actually, I don't know, you owe me money, X. What? fight starts, warning, you know, and then you fight.
An actual dialogue. X6, I would imagine. Exactly,
right? And then they blow up, and then they're like, Sigma will get you, X, in the end. And it's like, man, that character looked pretty cool, but all I got out of him was, you know, why did you turn Maverick Chilled Penguin? Ah, oh, because it's colder than I thought it would be.
He's got no chill.
He's got no chill.
it's amazing how, like, it took me a couple of X games to really appreciate X and Zero as characters and watch them develop.
Yeah.
But I can play your game and love your characters because you've actually made them.
Though, like,
you've made them more than like these one note things that have a singular purpose, and then they're done, and then that's it. Like, exactly. Like you have, there's an intention. Like, there's, they're living in this world, and they're more than just like a means to an end, like an ability,
yeah,
or like a boss weakness. They're more than just that.
Yeah,
and I love what you've done.
Oh, I appreciate that. The other thing I took inspiration from with that was, and this is kind of funny, was the Assassin's Creed games, the very first Assassin's Creed. I thought it was kind of cool how, like, ones. You know, the good ones, right? Like, the first one was so good. I was always kind of cool, but also that, like, you know, when you finally beat a boss, they have that sort of like that heart to heart moment where he's like talking to this person. You just learn more about that background. And I was like, man, that's a really cool way to sort of like learn more about the enemy. But then you realize how ridiculous it is because this guy's literally bleeding out. Like, this is what never actually happened. That you like
Metal Gear Solid. There's like a huge monologue. There's like, you're about to die. Here's an hour of cutscene.
It's explaining my trauma. 40,000 breaths.
We are the same person. Let me tell you why. God, just give me the car key already.
Why are you doing this? Do you have time? Okay, you have time. I'll tell you why this is happening. Sit down. It's going to be a long.
You want the detonation keys? Then we're doing therapy first.
So I was like, man, there's got to be a better way to do that, right? Because I get it, right? You want that exposition. You want a way in that moment. It's similar to Demon Slayer's kind of fun, a good way, the anime, to achieve this. Where it's like right before the killing blow strikes, the villain has their life flash with their eyes. And so you quickly kind of sense of like, okay, this is what led them to this point. It's, you know, and so that's kind of like another way to kind of solve it. I decided to solve it by making it such that like, you don't fight the, like, when you defeat like the Viper Masters, they don't die. They're not themselves in the suits that the pilot, the Vipers are called, but they pilot them remotely. So when that happens, then you essentially removing their tools of destruction, but you still maintain the life. And so therefore, hey now. And so you're able to like have a conversation that makes sense. Like, okay, because you're not actually dead. You're just incapacitated. Like, you don't have a way to fight. You're defeated.
Just an avatar. Like, yeah. They're still around. Yeah.
Everybody has to die. Sometimes you just got to show them who's boss. You got to be like, all right, what did we learn? Like,
exactly. I've reduced you to a keyboard warrior. So let us now have a conversation, right? Because you don't have any weapons. You're just behind a screen, behind a radio connection. And so I found that as like a neat way to sort of like have my cake and eat it too, where you can achieve like defeating things, but also make sense of like why this post sort of conversation would end up happening. But yeah, I'm so glad you guys are like really picking up on it and appreciating, because like, yeah, that was one of the key things I wanted to make unique about the game versus what it's to take inspiration from.
Shout out to your voice actors too.
These two or like the actual voice
the
actors?
Actual, yeah, actual voice actors. Cause like, oh, well both technically, I guess. Because there's a fine line between cheesy and Saturday morning cartoon cheesy.
Yeah.
And they hit that Saturday morning cartoon level of like bravado and melodrama. And I love it. I think it's really well done.
This cast is so great. So it's like Danny Chambers did Delta, Sofia Narvaez did Android, JC Brazil, she did the Dr. Shelton. CJ Heineman did Rocky Jones. Julie Park did Evie Wong. Ashley Biskey did Sasha Shelton. And last but not least, Luis Bermudez did Rey Alabrije. And what's great about this cast is that they had very little direction for me. Like, I just had the script and I gave them some, like, maybe some sound references here or there. But just because it was during the pandemic that most of the stuff was being recorded and kind of like the game is kind of being made. And so people picked up an ability to like recording at home and like remote studios, and they, you know, they just knocked out of the park with just, I tell you, man, I think Danny must have recorded like 1,000 lines. And of all lines she recorded, I think I had to give direction on like 10. It was like, hey, could you just make this a little sound more desperate, or make this final a little more umph to this? And so it's like, hats off to them. They are just a excellently self-directed and also very voice talented, like that. It's just awesome. Oh, and lastly, Yenny Ann did Dr. Dorado. And so with all of them, just really great.
Excellent cast.
That is so cool. Like, zero direction. Like, how often does that happen in this sort of industry where it's like, yeah, whatever you're thinking is great. No notes whatsoever.
Exactly zero. Little did we know you got 9 Robert De Niros.
Exactly. You're right.
Great job.
Can I pivot for a little bit?
Pivot away, buddy.
In a more broader, like, indie game dev question, because cool. This was a Kickstarter thing, but then eventually you found yourself with Humble.
Yeah.
Publishing. Let's walk through that. Okay. Thing. That doesn't happen every single day to most indie devs.
It doesn't. And some How'd friends of there? Mine, yeah, some friends of mine told me too, it happens even less likely when it's like your first game. So I'm like very fortunate that like the Kickstarter did help, I think, for the sake of giving it a sense of notoriety or just some sort of recognition that like, hey, you know, like this isn't just like someone's a personal idea. At least like, almost 2,000 people think this is something they also would like to play or they believe in. But yeah, the Kickstarter happened. I was not at all in much conversation with Humble at that time. The most was John Gavin Paulson, the former like indie scout for Humble. He reached out to me via Twitter before the Kickstarter, like in January of that year. Wasn't until like late April/May, and was like, because I was posting like just like clips of the game on Twitter and stuff. And he was like, seeing your game looks pretty cool. Can you send me a playable build? And he played it and gave some feedback and stuff. And so that kind of sort of like got the, I guess, put the bun in the oven or got the coals fired up a little bit. That like he happened just from his scouting talent, noticed the game and was like, hey, this is interesting. Let's keep in touch. Kickstarter goes. And then I don't really hear or communicate with Humble very much until later in the year when they kind of reached out. They announced like the Black Game Developer Fund, and they were like, mm-hmm. Hey, we think you should apply to it because your game is like a pretty good candidate for this. And so the Kickstarter parlayed into the BGDF, and then I ended up being one of the first recipients of that, which then with the funds from that, I was able to develop sort of like the main, the most compelling vertical slice for the game that kind of I had the intention of being as meager as possible. And I was like, hey, with this grant, I'm going to try to finish the whole game because I'm the first time making a game and I don't realize how outrageous that idea is. But I tried as best I could and I got to what felt like a compelling vertical slice. Humble then was interested to see how that turned out. And then many months passed where there isn't really any clear indication that like they're going to fund this, they're going to publish it even further. So I just kept like developing as best I could and financing it myself for the most part at that point. Keeping the team very small. So like the game, almost all the programming has been solo done, all the game design, all of like, and I started hiring a few people here that help a little bit with help like level design and a little bit on the art side, but leveraging marketplace assets best I could, but getting stuff like custom made where it need be. And it wasn't for like, I'd say like a year, I think, after the BGDF that then Humble was like, hey, we reviewed it. We really like the progress we're making with the game. Let's start talking about like making it bigger. And that's, I mentioned it, like, I don't know if you guys saw, like I gave a talk at GDC where I kind of talked about this detail where it became a point where Humble was like, we like it so much, we think we should make it a bigger game. But like for me, I work, I have a really secure job in tech, I'll put it that way, over out here in the Bay Area. And I was like, man, I'm already killing myself at this game with this very modest scope, because for me, right, the whole purpose of this was to create a 3D Mega Man X game. Like, you know, I didn't realize it was like the biggest thing ever. I just really wanted to see that come to fruition and with characters that were really cool and compelling and that spoke to me and spoke to like people that I knew growing up. And so like, I was like, I'm already kind of on track for that goal. And the game scope was designed around that, you know. So with Humble showing interest in it, to then ask, they were like, hey, we want to see what would happen, what would it take to make the game even bigger? I'm like, I don't know if I can manage that, you know, like, and that would require for me to leave what I'm doing full time to then focus on this full time. And for me, that's like, that's a, what is this, like a pail too far, or like a pigeon too dirty? I don't know. Some phrase that means that like.
So wait, what did bigger mean to them? Like,
that's a good question.
They said the word, what does that translate to on the game development side?
Yeah, so the game development side, that translates into like in broad terms, more content. So I initially targeted 4 bosses, like 4 bosses and a final boss. bigger means now eight bosses, like kind of matching more like the Mega Man sort of like
the traditional
tradition, right? Mm-hmm. Bigger means what are the thoughts for replay value? So even though it's a single player game, what is the ambition or thoughts about once someone completes this, what will compel them to kind of come back around? Is there like additional playable character? And Humble's very cool because they weren't the ones like, they weren't like, it must do this. They were like, they were very open-ended of like, if we gave you, if the budget was 3x bigger, what could you do? What would you do with it? You know what I'm saying? And then with that, I'm racking my brain about like, okay, these are things I could come up with, you know, like additional challenge modes. Again, bouncing off the notion of like, I'm new, so learn what you can from those who've done before you. I looked at like, how's Mega Man 11 structured? How was Devil May Cry like 3 through 5 structured? Because those are single player games by and large, but they do things to sort of like make the runtime and the experience like beefier and meatier. So what do? Challenge areas, a lot more like linear content. You know, there's like the first one. Additional playable characters and such and things as well. So I was like indexing off of those. Okay, maybe I can do something similar to those in my title. But through the conversations, I was like, this is still like much more than I can comfortably chew. And so they sort of like were okay with that, which is really neat about it. They're like, we feel like the project is still worth funding, even at its sort of like more sort of original scope, I'll call it, which was what I was intending for. And yeah, and that's when it becoming like what we agreed to have published.
You could have gotten 4 more bosses out of you. Get the fuck back to work.
Stay behind that keyboard, all right? All right. Don't you dare. Those bosses, man. A lot went into each one, man. Good
and
Lord.
It shows. More. All right, we just
no, really.
We just spent 15 it's like, minutes.
I've given you my all.
Characters.
This is all I have left to give. We need more. We need some more, Adam. It's not enough.
I mean, we can touch that a little bit before we move on. Like,
it is intriguing. That process, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's first of all, it's incredible that Humble would come with those suggestions or come with that offer and then be like, okay, well, let's figure out the best way to make what you actually, you know, what you're capable of making, what you've, you know, are comfortable making.
Right.
Did you come away from this with any regrets towards that? Like, did you ever say,
no.
Oh man, you're like, I could have gone bigger or I've learned enough where, or do you think this set you up for like the next one?
I think more the latter than anything, because again, it's my first like commercial game, right? You look at every it's highly unlikely. You know, there are some people. It's actually funny. Every time you see like a big indie hit, and people are like, "Whoa, where did this indie come from?" It's like it's usually preceded by like a skeleton, like a closet in a skeleton, like skeleton in the closet, right? It's like this is not their very first game. You know what I'm saying? Like these the folks, the teams behind these big hits typically have had other smaller games that kind of built up to that. One I think about a lot is like Death's Door and the team. I think Atomic Heart Acid Nerve. Acid Nerve is the name of the studio. Mm-hmm. Like people, like not many people played their first game. I think which was Titan Souls. I think is the name of it. But it's like
I love that game. It's like a 2D Shadow of the Colossus.
It is exactly right. It's like a 2D, like
way more frustrating,
like old school Zelda inspired camera, like Shadow of the Colossus. But people, they're known for Death's Door, right? And it's like wow, such polish, such amazingness. How do they do this? It's this small indie dev team's like, well, they made another game before this, which was very good, but like
that was already
the springboard that got to this, right? You know, so yeah, it's more so the latter because for me, it's like. I take a lot of consolation. Like I just feel satisfied because like I set out what I set out to do, right? Like I was able to maintain like my full time position in tech. I was able to support my family through this. I wasn't like beholden. Like my case is very unique. Like I never really got into games with the ambition of becoming a game developer for like as a career. I got into it because I really wanted to see something created. I really had a creative sort of like passion. And I have found myself with the skill and like I guess the grit to sort of like bring it into fruition. But like it never really like I never wanted to do this full time to begin with. It was really just like I don't know. It was like an artist who really wants to make like a one hit single, like a one album. It's like that was where my creativity took me. I just wanted to create that. But I will say this much though, Steve. Like it was an internal struggle for years actually, where I was like, what if, or maybe. Or like, you know, maybe I just got to turn the corner. Or like, I wonder, like, where I was always on the cusp of like, I think I might be on the verge of going full time or just making this my identity and making this my full time thing. And I felt like it's really struggling with myself with that internal for like a real long time. But then once I kind of like just came to terms with like, well, Adam, like, what did you set out to do originally? There's like this phrase I heard from someone recently. It's like, when you feel like quitting, just remember why you started. And so that's kind of what I was like drawing inspiration from. I was like, why did I start? I started because I wanted to see Mega Man X happen in 3D and be good. And I wanted to create characters which were really cool and really compelling. And the question is like, am I achieving that? I am. I'm making a 3D Mega Man X game that feels great to play. And I'm creating a world which is like a unique take on like the vision of the future. So you're doing what you set out to do. So woosah.
Yeah.
But you know what else though, Adam?
Yes, Andy.
Is you could do it again. And you can do more of this. It breaks my heart that along comes a guy that understands what Mega Man in a 3D space should look and feel and play like, and he's like, I did it, I'm gonna walk away now. Like, it's done.
You know what? And it's like
heartbreaking scenario.
Listen, sir. This is not goodbye. This is see you later. All right. You listen to me. What was I saying? But no. I think it might just be the post-launch like hangover or like just like haze that's still like talk. Because like this was a man. I mentioned it in GDC talk, but like on the my end, right? This was 3.5 years. Working 6 days a week at a minimum 11, sometimes 14-hour days for 3.5 years. I got 2 small kids, you know, like, and I'm basically juggling 2 lives. Like, I work full-time in tech and doing that, and then in the evenings and the weekends and scattered throughout the day sometimes, I'm managing a game studio and programming and designing and stuff. So I would never make a game like that again, in that way again, because that was just, like, fueled purely by just this motivation to see this thing created. But, like, man, that was, like, grueling, bro. Like, man. I don't think if someone came to me with that at the onset, like, this was going to take 3.5 years. You will have 1 day of weekend a week. All your vacations won't actually be vacations. You'll actually be working while your family's visiting family. Or when you go to visit family, you'll have to sneak away for half the trip just to work on the game. And this is your life for 3.5 years. I'd be like, yeah, hard pass.
I don't blame you. No blame.
But that does warm my heart, Andy. Hear that, like it's weird. It warms my heart to hear that brings you sadness, because it means I did a good job. It means immense sadness. Good job.
It's the greatest tragedy of my life.
the greatest. All right,
and I've been through some shit, Steve. You know,
I do know. Oh man,
we lived through Mighty Number 9. We lived through shitty Mega Man games,
man.
Dude. And this man could be the renaissance that the franchise deserves and needs. And he's like, he's walking away.
Maybe Capcom hits like,
hey, you don't want that.
Fez. he's like the guy that did Fez. I'll make one great game and walk away. Yeah. Don't Phil Fish me, Adam.
Don't Phil Fish me. We've got like in Discorded. We talked about getting OBS, and now we're being Phil Fished. Look at this.
I do not want to be Phil Fished either. All right, Adam, do you have time to do a little rapid fire fire with us?
I do have time.
All right, so let's do some rapid fire.
I'm sure he does.
This is where we...
He's got no time to make games. He's got time for rapid fire.
How do we boot someone from the call? How do we
get to know you? I'm the host. Although he's the host, so... Whoever is getting booted, it's probably not who you think.
I'm gonna be like in his DMs every day, Adam. I have a blank check. Let's make the sequel work.
I have an idea for a.
Listen, your kids are very self-sufficient. I watch them in the background.
Yeah,
they're
fine.
They don't need
they're,
you.
They are
they're
one
fine.
Of them
they're...
almost killed herself with tissue. What do you mean self-sufficient?
I mean, it's tissue is earth. That's from
it's
the
good
earth
for the immune it's system, you know.
It's from a leaf.
By the way, I was watching. I was like, I wish I was still that bendy. I was watching your kid on the bed.
Oh yeah, they saw you on the bed. They were as flexible as you.
Buddy. I wish I was that bendy still. Okay, rapid fire, Steve.
Yes. Go. All right, we're gonna start off with a softball here, Adam.
Here we go.
Blaster or sword? Like how? Which way? Which
are you
way
X or are you zero? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, I'm sword, man. Mm-hmm. I'm sword. Mm. It's like it's just so. It's like the sweetness of the efficiency of it. Ah, you're done. Ah, it's just mm-hmm. yeah. It's it and the satisfying the feel. Yeah, sword.
We need a Mega Man Zero in 3D, Adam. Just saying.
Oh, yeah, about that. I'll write that down.
Okay, so I'm going to ask two similar questions back to back. Yes, write that down. That's for free. It's a freebie. Which Mega Man X boss do you most relate to? Or do you identify
most relate
with?
To?
Yeah, which one do you think is like, oh yeah, that's like my spirit Maverick?
That's a good one. I think my spirit Maverick is the Mavericks. Those are all the bad guys.
Whatever.
I like Storm Eagle.
Storm Eagle is pretty dope.
I like Storm because he had this little like majesticness about him, and he felt of all the Mavericks, he felt like he was like he had like the most reason for like why he was like he just seemed to be noble and his ambition just misguided. And I was like, and it was cool. His flight took place on a freaking plane, and he's like flying around the entire time. Yeah, Storm Eagle's rad, man. Storm Eagle's
one of the slickest designs. Yes. And they brought him back for X6 too.
See?
That was pretty dope.
You do that.
All right. So on that note, I'm gonna do a follow-up question. If you were a Maverick, a boss, an original one, what would your name be?
What would my name be? Oh, that's so good. Okay, so the convention is adjective.
It's gotta be a
animal.
Thing, yes, an animal, yes.
Adjective.
You
animal.
Know the rules.
I would be like Slash Dolphin. That'd be my freaking name.
That is. That's good.
Are I'd you be like Slash a, Dolphin? Like a. Are you like a like 70s 80s punker? Like you got like the.
Am I?
Like the dorsal fin mohawk.
Oh, we'll take that. We will take those.
I mean,
like a street shark
fin
but a dolphin.
Is a mohawk. Yeah. And like the fins are lined with like spikes, you know what
yeah.
I'm saying?
Yeah, man.
And
yeah.
I've got like a little like jacket, like a little like leather jacket around the little fins, which are spiked. And yeah, Slash Dolphin. Yeah. And
I like it a lot.
Just to add to the whole thing, I've got a guitar strung to my back that I
clearly
can't play with my dolphin arms, but it's one of the attacks. Like you swing that thing out. Yeah, Slash Dolphin.
Oh, man. Love that.
Shit, I'm gonna like X5 flashbacks. Was it Guns N' Roses?
Yeah,
every boss had a Guns N' Roses reference.
That's stupid. let's change gears here. Let's go to food. I love food, is always a good fall.
Oh, food's
here.
Good.
Here we go. Food.
Food's great.
What would you rather have an allergy to? Would you rather have an allergy to gluten? Or would you rather have an allergy to dairy?
Gluten or dairy? Oh, I'd rather be allergic to gluten, man. There's too many things in this world that cheese and dairy products have only improved this world. Like you get cheese, pizza, ice cream. Come on, man. Cookies, all baked goods. Come now. I mean, well, I guess I couldn't have baked goods because I'm gluten. But like ice cream alone is top tier enough where like, hey,
that's true.
Like I'm not giving that up for bread. Who trades ice cream for bread? Only a dummy.
Commies, that's who.
Speaking of food, this is not really a food question, but it's food adjacent. What is your chicken soup for the soul?
Chicken soup, like my actual chicken soup?
No, what is your chicken soup in the more existential, metaphorical, what is the thing that makes your soul happy? What is your chicken soup, quote unquote?
Oh wow. Oh, that's deep. Wow, we went from Slash Dolphin to how do you
this is rapid fire, baby. This is how we roll. This is how
okay,
we
rapid
do.
Fire.
We play
for
keeps.
Back quick.
We play for keeps around here. We want to know
oh my gosh, chicken soup for me. Helping people, honestly. Like to know that something I did lessened the burden and or made someone's path like lighter or easier. Like I just like, oh man, I feel like my day has been made if I've done something meaningful for someone else. So that's my chicken soup is like helping someone else.
Disgusting. I love it.
What is the best way you recall being able to help someone?
Best way. The best way, like the best time I helped someone.
Yeah. What, like if you could think back of like, maybe it was a, maybe not the, like the most grand, but it was the way that kind of surprised you that it helped somebody and it's something that really filled you.
I used to, this is a good one to put. I used to volunteer for this high school, like this youth sort of like development of like event. We'd host like, it's called MIST. We would host like weekend competitions for students, 35 competitions over a 3-day weekend. And I was like I helped lead like the DC chapter for it. And, it's hard to pinpoint any singular instance of this because it happened a number of times where folks would they start off as like people who competed in it, and then they would later come back in life and help the volunteer and run it as well. And then they would come and tell me that, like, that event changed my life, or like meeting you, like, was the reason why I'm now doing this thing. Like, I'm now doing spoken word, you know, for a living, or now why I'm now like a writer, or like a journalist. So those moments, and the one that kind of speaks the most is like the guy I think who now leads the group. His name is Zaheen Huston. He's a really good friend of mine. Yeah, he just sort of like let me know that like meeting me and me interact with him like has been an inspiring for him to continue in that same path, and like and stuff like that. Like, I didn't think about it. That wasn't what I was doing. I wasn't like, yeah, I hope one of you mother effers gets inspired by me. But you know, it was just, I was doing what I thought was a great thing to do. And then for him to come back years later and be like, yeah, I let you know that like what you said that day kind of like shaped things for me in a significant way. That one probably stands out a lot as I'm rapid fire trying to go through it.
I will never inspire people.
Not with that attitude.
I think the most maybe I'll get like a mention in someone's suicide note. Maybe. Oh, that's my God. Would you rather always would you rather always have wet socks or wet hair?
Wet hair, a 100% wet hair, bro. Wet socks. That's just... wet socks.
Come on now. Or
that is a scourge. That is a scourge of the earth. Wet socks. Oh my God.
Scourge of the earth.
Wet socks. You know, you knew that question was out of pocket the minute it left your lips.
I can feel it.
Wet socks. You crazy. Has anyone said wet socks to that question? I want to know.
SpongeBob. SpongeBob just said wet socks. It's part of his charm.
It's part of his charm.
It's part of the whole pineapple.
What about you, Andy? Wet socks or wet hair? Huh?
I have no hair, essentially, so sure. We'll do the wet hair.
Oh my gosh, cop out, Captain. Right.
Wet head.
It would dry almost instantly.
Wow.
When I walk out of the shower, it's already dry.
Is it a decision if it wasn't a decision you made? I feel like you've already, like...
If I was blessed with actual hair, give me real hair. Give me my hair again.
Yeah.
I'll take wet socks any day of the week for hair. You're
disgusting. Oh. Again, we're back to the question. How do we boot someone from this call?
All right, Andy, I got one more, and then you'll take us home with the final
question. Oh, boy. I know his answer already.
Adam. This is a real one. I don't know why this came to my head, but I was like, oh, that could be fun.
All right.
If your excrement was nuclear, would you tell the government?
No, man, it's like black market shit. That's like that's how you fund his next game. Selling piles
my
of shit.
Radioactive poop.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'd tell the government.
Well, yeah.
It's like nuclear pieces.
Is this something?
Are they paying?
I don't know.
Are they paying?
Maybe they just keep you locked up somewhere to give
Someone's got to pay for that.
Someone has to pay. If they're paying, I'm answering. I'll play it to that much. If I could, through a friend who would be aware of this, whose name rhymes with Meave and whose name rhymes with Mandrius, if I could, through friends, inquire to the government's asking price for radioactive poop. Yeah, we might have a conversation.
If I had an unlimited supply of radioactive material, would that bode well?
Listen, it could be a weapon. Also, like, for a renewable energy source, too. You never know. So you get, a lot of camps could be out for this thing.
But,
so.
But does that mean he's hooked up to machines and is, like, they're trying to replicate it? Is this, like, a Weapon X situation?
No, they're feeding him, like, chili hot dogs to make as much as they can possibly out of him. That's what they're doing. Yeah,
so now it's seven. Now we've made this a horror movie.
I don't... The thing I can't wrap my mind around is, like, how am I not killing all the people around me? You know what I'm saying? Like,
for as long as you remember, you just flushed it. You know what I mean? And they're like, where's this nuclear poop coming from?
Oh my God.
What are we doing here? And you're like, Mr. President, I have something that you would,
yes,
that
that's what we're missing
you.
In this podcast. The lore of the radioactive shit that our guest is.
Listen, Toxic Avengers is making a comeback. Like, this could be part of the team. You know what I mean?
No, it cannot. Oh my God.
No, it cannot.
That'd be the only application they reject out of hand. Like, no, we don't want you on this team.
we need lead toilets. All right. Andy, take us home.
It's been a blast, Adam. This has been one of our better conversations, I feel. We've had a lot of great conversations on this show, so it says a lot, man, for you as a human being.
Thank you. Same to you guys, man.
Don't overthink it. It's a very simple question.
Okay.
Yes, this is true.
It's a simple choice, and the choice is Andy or Steve. I know, it's dreadful, isn't it? It's dreadful. It's bad.
Andy or Steve.
I know.
I would pick...
We apologize.
I would pick Steve to carry my radioactive poop and Andy to carry my game design doc for Protodroid Delta 2.
There it is.
I don't know which one's more valuable. I haven't seen your sales. So that could be an insult. I'm not sure. You gave him your intellectual property. You gave me your feces. Ipso facto, I don't know. Mine might be worth more money.
We're both buying yachts. That's the long and short of it.
Right. This will be a cartoon on Crunchyroll. We both Radioactive Poop and Protodroid Delta are both going to be an anime on Crunchyroll for sure.
I could never answer that question, Andy or Steve. What an unfair question. That's absurd.
That's why we ask it.
The fact that you find that unfair is also really good too. I find that very flattering.
That's perfect.
That's like one didn't skew more towards a complete douchebag in the entire hour of talking to each other.
Speaking of unfair questions and unfair asks, ladies and gentlemen, if you like what you're listening to and viewing, please hit that subscribe button and consider going to our Patreon, patreon.com/dualscreens, just like our Patreon producer, Colton the Apprentice Nestler. We can't continue to grow without all of your support, so if you do that for us, it would be excellent. You get to hang out in our Discord for as little as $1. You come in there, hang out with us, our developer friends, chat all day about video games, sports, wrestling, TV, movies, music, and we even have a corner there for mental health help, whatever you guys need. I mean, our Discord community is incredible, so you can join. It's a one-stop shop for all of your fun, and it's the internet in its purest form. Memes, GIFs, and friends. What is the internet if not that?
Till that matters.
You know what I mean? If you want to follow us on social media, we're at @dual_screens. I'm at @batchild27. Andy's at @pantsguy. Adam, where could everybody find you? Where could everybody find Protodroid Delta?
Oh, yeah.
Where can they find your boy?
Where can they find your boy? I did notice that's my title on the screens here. That was amazing. That's a great touch.
Fantastic.
Let me see. Me, I'm on Twitter. It's like the only socials that I kind of like frequent. Just Adam Kareem, @AdamKareem, K-A-R-E-E-M as in moon. I've been on a bit of a social media hiatus after the game launched, just to sort of like clear my mind and kind of just sort of like start fresh. The game, though, is everywhere you can buy video games. So it's on Steam, Protodroid Delta, and it's also on Nintendo eShop. It's on the PS4, the PlayStation Store, as well as the Xbox Store, or I guess the Windows. I don't know which one they call it these days. All right. But where you buy your digital games for your Xbox is where you find Protodroid Delta. Yeah. On every major console. And yeah, it's a good time, man. Thanks for having me. And this was actually one of my, I've been on a number of interviews, I guess, through the 3.5 year journey. This, I think I laughed the most on this one. This has been great.
Heck yeah.
Fantastic.
Great. I like that. And
can stop now too, Steve.
Yeah, we can do it. Hang up the boots. Nobody needs another one of these. Nobody needs it.
All right, I haven't answered my question. It's Steve. And you, Steve.
I'm carrying poop and the IP. Yes. Mutually exclusive. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, viewers. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Adam. And as always, please be excellent to each other.